Hey everyone, welcome to Share Your Sparkle. I'm your host, Dr. Darlene Berrios, and this is episode 14. What does a Patronus, a dissertation, and a Puerto Rican have in common? All right, everyone. I'll try to weave things together for you in terms of answering today's episode question. But before I get started, I want to ask you, what are you feeding your brain in the morning? What are you feeding your soul? What are you feeding your body? And I'm not talking about literally with food. I'm thinking about how, for me, the first 15, 20 minutes of my day, I spend reading a text, listening to a song, and then reading a shorter text. And while that's what I do, I know it makes a difference in terms of how my day is framed and the first things that I'm putting into my mind before I get started, before my feet literally hit the ground. So what are you doing the first 15, 20 minutes of your day? And if it's not something that's feeding your soul, think about changing that so that it is something that's feeding your soul. Maybe it's something that you write and read back to yourself. Maybe it's a song that you listen to on repeat. But find something. Give your heart, your soul, and your body 15 to 20 minutes of food before you even get going and running and trying to tackle the craziness of the day. And if you have kids, I get it, life is busy, get up 15 minutes earlier. The only person I'm going to give a pass on this is my friend who's a farmer, and I believe he probably gets up at like 4-ish, so he doesn't have to get up 15 minutes earlier, but he's probably hashtag farm life strong, so he gets a pass. But everyone else, set your alarm for 15 to 20 minutes earlier and feed your brain, soul, body, and heart something good. So that's my tip for the day. As far as for today's episode, I am going to read something. I like to read different quotes or passages from books that I've read. I will thread a story for you, and hopefully it'll have some meaning and power, and then I'll end with another reading. So I did a lot of reading over the summer, and one of the authors that I came to know is Oria, and I can't remember how, but she has written a few books. She has written What We Ache For, The Invitation, and maybe something else. I can't remember, something about creativity. But The Invitation is actually a poem that she turned into a book, and it's a poem that she wrote one night after going to an event or a party, and she was just feeling this longing of expressing herself and sharing to the world what she really thinks is important. So, The Invitation. It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for, and if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking like a fool for love, for your dream, for the adventure of being alive. It doesn't interest me what planets are squaring your moon. I want to know if you have touched the center of your own sorrow. If you have been opened by life's betrayals or have been shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you can sit with pain, mine or your own, without moving to hide it or fade it or fix it. I want to know if you can be with joy, mine or your own, if you can dance with wildness and let the ecstasy fill you to the tips of your fingers and toes without cautioning us to be careful, to be realistic, to remember the limitations of being human. It doesn't interest me if the story you are telling me is true. I want to know if you can disappoint another, to be true to yourself. If you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul. If you can be faithless and therefore trustworthy. I want to know if you can see beauty even when it's not pretty every day, and if you can source your own life from its presence. I want to know if you can live with failure, yours and mine, and still stand on the edge of the lake and shout to the silver of the full moon, "Yes!" It doesn't interest me to know where you live or how much money you have. I want to know if you can get up after the night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do what needs to be done to feed the children. It doesn't interest me who you know or how you came to be here. I want to know if you will stand in the center of the fire with me and not shrink back. It doesn't interest me where or what or with whom you have studied. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. I want to know if you can be alone with yourself and if you truly like the company you keep in the empty moments. And that was Oria, the Mountain Dreamer. And she turned the poem that I just read, The Invitation, into a book. So I invite you to read it. It's a pretty quick read. She talks a lot about life and in one of her books about creativity, she gives a lot of good exercises relating to trying to generate or feed that fuel within you. She talks about it as a writer, but it's good for anybody embarking on any creative endeavor. And The Invitation. Check it out. Get it on Amazon if you want. So, what is a Patronus, a dissertation, and a Puerto Rican have in common? I know it's a very interesting title, but it does all kind of come together. I was talking to my brother the other day, and he was asking me, what are you going to do your next episode on? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I have to pray about it. And then it kind of just hit me within that conversation. So a few days ago, I was hiking, and I told you, I mean, if you know me or have been tuning in, you know that I hike pretty frequently, and every morning I head out, head to the top of the mountain. And over the past months, something that I've been doing is writing either words or different phrases on rocks and just leaving them there. And in some cases, the rocks disappear. Like, I don't know if people pick them up or they get mad and throw them in the woods. I have no clue. But they're, I think that it's just like sometimes I see a rock and it calls out a certain word, like hope or pray or joy. And whatever it calls for, I take my Sharpie and I put it on. Over time, actually, some of the rocks have the messages faded just because the weather, the rain. But there are some that you can still see. And the interesting thing is, now if you're like, wait a second, you're not supposed to be like writing on rocks in the mountains. I'm like, okay, people, this is what I have to say to that. When you're hiking, there's paint on the trees to mark the trail. All right? The red trail, the Smurf blue trail, whatever color trail there is. People paint the trees. Well, I'm painting the trail in God's way. I'm painting the path in a different way with words and messages. So that's my response to that, if anybody's thinking about that. And over the past couple months, I have found a few rocks that have had other messages that I didn't write. And they're not in my handwriting at all. One of them is, all you need is love. The other one is, I think it's seek me early. Those are the two that stand out. So I was walking down the trail a few days ago, and I was thinking about all the shifts that I've been through over the past 10 months, like leaving and living in a new place, leaving my profession or career or job, you know, like just all these different shifts that have happened. And I know that people are, like starting my own business and, being a podcast host, right? All these different things. And I'm sure there are people that think I'm crazy. And like, so this is kind of where my head was at, and feeling like, what am I doing? Like, am I on the right path? And then I look down and I see a rock with some red words on it. And it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, dot, dot, dot." And I started like bawling. I started bawling right away. Because in the, I believe, I can't think of it right now. "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans of hope," so forth. And that's actually the quote on the journal that I'm using right now. It's a quote from these prayer cards that I picked, I believe, when we switched from 2017 to 2018. At the time in the gathering, I asked everybody to do a little ritual, and I had these prayer cards, and we passed some bread around, and we drank some wine. Like, we passed wine around, and if you wanted to, you could dip your bread in the wine. And then I also passed these prayer cards around and asked people to pick a prayer card, and I remember that was the prayer card that I picked years ago. And it was also the quote I opened up to in the Bible. Sometimes I do that every once in a while. It's like, I'm wondering about something and I just open up a book. You know, sometimes it's not a religious book, but sometimes it is. And when I was deciding whether or not to leave my job, and when I opened up the Bible, it was right to that quote, "For I know the plans I have for you." So it's a pretty powerful quote that has been in my mind and heart for the past 3 or 4 years. And I saw it the other day on a rock. So I took a picture of it and I text my sister-in-law, my sister and my brother. And I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, and this is not my handwriting. And this is like, must have been some message somebody else wrote, because it was kind of sloppy. I mean, I do have sloppy handwriting, but anyway. So I get down the mountain, and that's when I talked to my brother a little bit later, and I was like, oh, wait a second. I think I did write that message on that rock. Okay, call me my dad, because I forgot. I think that was just a message I forgot that I had written, but it was still powerful, and it made me think about like, how can we help ourselves get through things? Right? That was what came to mind. Like, how can we help ourselves get through things? And even though I had forgotten that that was the message I wrote, and it probably would have been just as cool if somebody else had written it, but I think it was pretty cool that I forgot and that message was still there for me to access when I needed it. Like, when I was literally thinking about all the shifts in my life, my eyes found this rock with that message. So here's what I'm thinking. How can we help ourselves get through things? And I thought about Harry Potter. So that's Patronus, the Patronus, not Patron, people. Okay, I didn't say Patron, but Patronus from Harry Potter. When I went through the dissertation process, and me being who I am, a Puerto Rican, one of the things, so let me explain. If you have your doctorate in philosophy or education, then you have are familiar with this process through your experience. And for those of you who haven't experienced this and you're interested in becoming a doctor, I'm almost positive everyone listening has the ability to do this, because if you know how to read and how to write and how to conduct research, that's what you're going to do. You read, you write, and you do some research. I mean, you put it all together. And then you have to talk about it. Okay? You defend your dissertation. That's a really simple form, but if you break it down to what I did for 3 years in a program, I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of writing. I did some research. And then I talked about it. Yeah, that's what I did. And I paid a lot of money for it. I kind of want my money back. But the hardest part, so this is where the hard part comes in. It's sustained, focused energy. That's all it is, people. If you can sustain focused energy on something, the reading, the writing, the research, and talking about it for years, there you go. You've got it. Now, if you don't want to, then you don't have to. But that's where, and maybe in general, where a lot of people get tripped up on things and not doing them, because it takes sustained, focused energy. So, if you want to get something done, how can you help yourself through that sustained, focused energy? Imagine that it's already been done. In Harry Potter, there's this special kind of magic that you can conjure, and it takes a high-powered wizard to do it, a Patronus, to get away the Dementors. Like, that's like the only thing, these like dark, evil spirits that come and like suck the soul out of you and get you in ways that are really just like whatever you're scared about it. The Dementors, like, they like make those fears in you seem so real that you feel like you're going to die, and they want to just suck the life and soul out of you. But a Patronus is kind of like this, I want to say, wizarding animal that you can conjure, and you have specific ones that are just for you to help you get rid of Dementors, right? So in the book, and if you've never read Harry Potter, you should, because it's really a book about love and loss and friendship. I believe the author actually lost her mother while she was writing the books, or maybe right before, or maybe while she was writing the books. And you can feel that loss of her mother, that love of her mom throughout the books. So I highly recommend you reading the books if you haven't, because while people might be like, oh, it's just about a bunch of young kids, it's really about love and loss, and it's very powerful. So try it out. Anyway, so in the book, The Prisoner of Azkaban, and thanks, Gab, for showing me where to find it or what book it's in. Hermione has, she's basically like has this power playing with time to help her get through all these courses and get all her work done. So if you're familiar with the book, Hermione is like Harry Potter's best friend, or one of his best friends. And she's super geeky and nerdy, and she just loves learning and wants to do well all the time and get the highest marks possible. So in this particular book, she was like trying to take all these classes and do really well in them, but she used this time travel trick like to help her. But it comes in handy later on in the book when the Dementors are like attacking them. Like there's always drama in the wizarding world, right? And Harry, he's like on the verge of passing out. They're in the woods and the Dementors are attacking them. There's all this drama going on with all these people, and like you're finding out, you know, someone's a werewolf and all this other stuff. And he sees across the lake someone conjuring up a Patronus, right? And it's in the form of a stag, which is the same Patronus as his dad. Now, in Harry Potter, his parents die at the beginning. That usually happens in kids' books, just so you know. They get rid of the adults right away. So in some way, manner, fashion, the adults have to get out of the way so the kids can do their work. And in this case, you know, Harry Potter's parents got killed. So it seems very strange that his dad would be across the lake, and his dad was a powerful wizard, conjuring up this Patronus because he's been dead since the beginning of the book. And let me just read a little bit here. "Didn't you see what they looked like?" said Hermione eagerly. "Was it one of the teachers?" "No," said Harry. "He wasn't a teacher. But it must have been a really powerful wizard to drive all those Dementors away. If the Patronus was shining so brightly, didn't it light him up? Couldn't you see?" "Yeah, I saw him," said Harry slowly. "But maybe I imagined it? I wasn't thinking straight. I passed out right before or right afterward." "Who do you think it was?" "I think," Harry swallowed, knowing how strange this was going to sound, "I think it was my dad." Harry glanced up at Hermione and saw her mouth was fully open now. She was gazing at him with a mixture of alarm and pity. "Harry, your dad's, well, dead," she said quietly. "I know that," said Harry quickly. "You think you saw his ghost?" "I don't know. No, he looked solid. But then, maybe I was seeing things," said Harry, "but from what I could see, it looked like him. I've got photos of him." Hermione was still looking at him as though worried about his sanity. "I know it sounds crazy," said Harry flatly. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. And the big thing about, you know, when you're working with time travel, you can't be seen. You can't let your past self see your future self, just so all of you know. So one of the big things Hermione kept saying is, don't let yourself be seen. Don't get in the way. And then we were a little bit further in the chapter. And Harry says, "I'm not going to try and interfere," said Harry quickly. "But if we don't see what's going on, how are we going to know when it's time to rescue Sirius?" "Well, okay then. I'll wait here with Buckbeak. But Harry, be careful. There's a werewolf out there. And the Dementors." Harry stepped outside again and edged around the cabin. He could hear yelping in the distance. That meant the Dementors were closing in on Sirius. He and Hermione would be running to him any moment, like their past selves. Harry stared out toward the lake, his heart doing a kind of drum roll in his chest. Whoever had sent the Patronus would be appearing at any moment. For a fraction of a second, he stood, irresolute, in front of Hagrid's door. "You must not be seen." But he didn't want to be seen. He wanted to do the seeing. He had to know. And there were the Dementors. They were emerging out of the darkness from every direction, gliding around the edges of the lake. They were moving away from where Harry stood to the opposite bank. He wouldn't have to get near them. Harry began to run. He had no thought in his head except his father. If it was him, if it really was him, he had to know, had to find out. The lake was coming nearer and nearer, but there was no sign of anybody. On the opposite bank, he could see tiny glimmers of silver, his own attempts at a Patronus. There was a bush at the very edge of the water. Harry threw himself behind it, peering desperately through the leaves. On the opposite bank, the glimmers of silver were suddenly extinguished. A terrified excitement shot through him. Any moment now. "Come on," he muttered, staring about. "Where are you? Dad, come on." But no one came. Harry raised his head to look at the circle of Dementors across the lake. One of them was lowering his hood. It was time for the rescuer to appear, but no one was coming to help this time. And then it hit him. He understood. He hadn't seen his father. He had seen himself. Harry flung himself out from behind the bush and pulled out his wand. "Expecto Patronum!" he yelled. And out of the end of his wand burst not a shapeless cloud of mist, but a blinding, dazzling silver animal. He screwed up his eyes trying to see what it was. It looked like a horse. It was galloping silently away from him across the black surface of the lake. He saw it lower its head and charge at the swarming Dementors. Now it was galloping around and around the black shapes on the ground, and the Dementors were falling back, scattering, retreating into the darkness. They were gone. The Patronus turned. It was cantering back toward Harry across the still surface of the water. It wasn't a horse. It wasn't a unicorn either. It was a stag. It was shining brightly as the moon above. It was coming back to him. It stopped at the bank. Its hooves made no mark on the soft ground as it stared at Harry with its large silver eyes. Slowly, it bowed its antlered head, and Harry realized. "Prongs," he whispered. But as his trembling fingertips stretched toward the creature, it vanished. Harry stood there, hand still outstretched. Then, with a great leap of his heart, he heard hooves behind him. He whirled around and saw Hermione dashing toward him, dragging Buckbeak behind her. "What did you do?" she said fiercely. "You said you were only going to keep a lookout." "I just saved all our lives," said Harry. "Get behind here, behind this bush. I'll explain." Hermione listened to what had just happened with her mouth open yet again. Did anyone see you?" "Yes. Haven't you been listening? I saw me, but I thought I was my dad. It's okay." "Harry, I can't believe it. You conjured up a Patronus that drove away all those Dementors? That's very, very advanced magic." "I knew I could do it this time," said Harry, "because I'd already done it. Does that make sense?" People, if we give ourselves and our minds the power to know that we've already done something before, think about that kind of magic and how they can take us through things. If you've already done it, or if you've seen yourself already do it, or can imagine that to be so, then it'll get done. So with my dissertation, one of the first things I did was on a post-it note, right? I wrote, "This doctorate journey is for mom and dad. You can do this. In fact, it's already been done." I have no clue if the grammar is correct on that, but I wrote that in 2013, and I graduated on May 19th, 2016, and I wrote the graduation date down on the post-it note, and I kept that by my bed. And each time I had work to do, each time I had to sit in front of a computer and write or read or do some research or put it all together, I just reminded myself, this is already done. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean that I just told myself that and got done. I gave myself permission to know that I could do it, and allowed myself the power of thinking, yes, this is already done. Okay, so now what are the steps I need to get to the finish line? And slowly but surely, over the 3 years, over the coursework, over the writing and the reading, it got done. So I imagined myself already as a doctor before I even started the journey. So how can that help you right now? I think I kind of need to use that magic right now too. And along the way, who can you find to help you? I know that one time I called my little brother, and I appreciate his life coaching skills, because I think it might have been about 6 months before graduation, and I was like, "Oh, this is really hard." And there was a long pause, and he was like, "Are you crying? There's no crying in dissertationing." And I was like, "You're right. There's no crying in dissertationing." And sometimes that's all you need to snap out of it and get back on the horse. But there's no crying in dissertationing. That kind of coaching actually really helps me. For some people it doesn't, but for me it helped. So for anything that you're going through right now, give yourself the power and permission to see yourself getting through it. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but it might help. Okay, people, I'm going to leave you with a quote, and I really appreciate the friend who sent this my way. And like I said, if you haven't read Harry Potter, you should. It's a great book about love, loss, and friendship. But a friend sent me this, and it's Albert Camus. This is the quote. He said, "In the midst of hate, I found there was, within me, an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was, within me, an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was, within me, an invis- an invincible calm. I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer, and that makes me happy. For it says that no matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me there is something stronger, something better, pushing right back. Okay, people, accept your sparkle, surrender to it, and allow it to be so. Until then, keep shining!